Welcome to the Regional Roundup. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Ahead this hour, it's a conversation with Jabari Banks. He plays the character of Will Smith in the new series Bel Air, and the debate over whether we should keep toggling back and forth between daylight saving and standard time is heating up. But first, as many of us well know, you don't have to lift a finger to fill the gas tank in New Jersey. Self-serve has been banned for over 70 years, and it seems New Jerseyans like it that way. A recent Rutgers Eagleton poll shows most respondents would rather have attendants pump their gas, a distinctly Jersey tradition, as all other states in the union allow at least some self-serve. However, New Jersey might soon follow the rest of the country. A number of attempts to include self-service over the years have failed, but supporters say the time is ripe for change, and new bipartisan legislation has been introduced to the state assembly. Matt Friedman is a reporter for Politico New Jersey, and he writes New Jersey's Playbook. He's here with us now on the Roundup. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
So apparently there are some pretty powerful arguments these days for change. Who is behind the self-serve movement, and what's the reasoning?
Yeah, the gas station industry, from time to time, will propose something like this. It's the New Jersey Gas Retailers Association. It has a longer name that I can't remember immediately, but that's okay. They have new arguments now and somewhat more persuasive arguments than before, which is, A, the price of gas is quite high right now. Adjusted for inflation, not quite the highest it's ever been, but it's getting there. And second, there is a labor shortage. And a lot of gas stations are having trouble finding people to help pump gas. And a lot of people are noticing maybe more cones than usual at the gas pumps that aren't available because there's no one to pump them.
Sure.
So those are the arguments the industry is now using to revive this effort, which every time it's been tried over the past 70 years has been doomed to failure.
So many owners, Matt, are having a tough time hiring and keeping employees, especially post-pandemic, or we're still in it technically. What are retailers saying about the issues which are making the job of gas station attendant less appealing these days? What are you hearing?
Well, I just think it's a pretty low-skilled job, and right now there's a lot of searching for jobs like that. There's not that many people to fill them, according to the retailers. I've never pumped gas. It was never a job I had. I don't really have any experience on the ground there. I can certainly say that it does seem like it's been a little hard. I've had to wait a little longer often when I'm driving through New Jersey to get my gas pumped. That's just personal experience. But I think it's interesting, the poll you mentioned, which shows New Jerseyans still prefer to get their own gas pumped. It's an interesting number, but the thing is, they weren't asked about the arguments on the other side of this, which is, if it's true that according to the retailers, you would save money, they claim about 15 cents a gallon.
Okay.
And that's a big if. The people in that poll weren't asked that question. The poll was conducted before this effort. So that might sway a few people the other way if they would actually save 15 cents a gallon.
Matt, that kind of goes into this tweet from a listener who asks, would self-service lower prices at the pump? Most gas stations are manned by one to two people. Those employees aren't going anywhere. This is just a push by larger gas stations to cut jobs. They'll keep the prices the same after. I mean, we can't know that for sure. What do you say to this person's sentiment?
Yeah, I mean, that might be somewhat valid. I haven't seen any evidence that the big Wawa is pushing this necessarily. But I will say there's been a little bit of reporting. We only have one other state to look at here, which is Oregon. It's the only other state in the country that for the longest time also banned self-serve. But they recently rolled that back just for the rural areas. So in certain rural areas, people can pump their own gas.
Okay.
There was no appreciable change in gas prices based on the report in the record after Oregon allowed that. But I don't really think it's apples to apples because they only allowed it partially. So I really can't say if gas prices will actually decline if they do this. And I haven't seen any lobbying reports that suggest the big stations. But I do think it's just an interesting little part of New Jersey culture. And it's something I think, regardless of price, I think it's something that New Jerseyans hold on to as a symbol of New Jersey. They don't want to change it.
Well, another tweet, this one from Stefan, who says, talk about something that will not go over well. I mean, if the legislation met is eventually approved, you know, one of the state's classic mottos will become obsolete. Jersey girls don't pump gas.
They don't. And it's interesting because if you look at that poll, there is a big gender gap. There's a very, very clear gender gap showing that overwhelmingly women do not want to pump their own gas. And men, it's like a small majority. But women, it's overwhelming. And I've seen it myself. I'm not a New Jersey native, but I've always, you know, I grew up in New York State, fairly close to New Jersey, but not subject to the sort of fourth grade indoctrination of New Jersey culture that the kids go through here. So I've kind of had the opportunity to study New Jerseyans in their native habitat for most of my life. And, you know, I will say it's sort of one of those things that they just look at it sort of like the pork roll. They're fiercely protective of it. Nobody else can make fun of it. It's something that makes New Jersey, New Jersey. When you're so used to being dominated by New York City and Philadelphia, anything that sort of sticks out and makes New Jersey unique is embraced by New Jerseyans.
Yeah, of course.
And so it's sort of like the Taylor Ham effect. It's the Taylor Ham / pork roll effect.
Okay. Well, listen, I've lived in New Jersey for many years. I haven't pumped gas in many years. So I'm not sure how I feel about this. I will say that, you know, as a woman, if I'm at a gas station late at night, and it's nice to have somebody fill the tank for me. I don't have to get out of the car, whether that's a rational thought or not. I've also heard that there is, you know, some people, you know, women especially, think about safety when it comes to this issue. So,
mm-hmm. And I suppose so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so back in 2015, there was, I guess that was the last big attempt to include self-service in New Jersey. Obviously didn't pan out. Get into this for us a bit, Matt, if you would.
I'm trying to even remember 2015. I know that there might have been a brief period. I think Governor Christie called it a third rail of New Jersey politics at the time, and I think he was right. He had done a lot of internal polling, which showed similar things to the little public polling there has been on the issue. Governor Corzine tried it, I think, in 2006, shortly after he took office. His predecessor, Dick Cody, as governor, had warned him against it, said, don't do it, don't do it. And I talked to Cody the other day, and Corzine told him, you know, with some colorful language, that yeah, it was a big mistake. You were right. So it's been tried, it's failed. The only thing that could maybe change some attitudes to it now is the rising gas prices and labor shortage. I can say that, you know, most people who aren't from New Jersey just do not understand this, at least based on my perspective, me being most people. It's just we want to just pump our gas and go. We don't want to wait around. Yeah. And also, I feel somewhat obligated to tip the gas attendants. I find that I'm in pretty minority doing this, but it's one of those things where it's like, that's another dollar. So even though New Jersey has cheaper gas prices, I feel like I'm making up with it, you know, by tipping a buck or two to the gas attendant just because that seems like what you should do.
Well, so this new legislation to allow self-serve has, again, it has bipartisan support. How exactly would it incorporate self-service?
It would kind of phase it in so New Jerseyans wouldn't have to give it up altogether. For 3 years, every gas station would be required to have full service available if the customer chooses it. Of course, the legislation does not say the prices must be the same between self-serve and full serve. So presumably you would pay a little more for the full service gas. After 3 years, most stations, with the exceptions of the ones on the Turnpike and the Parkway, would be able to phase that out. I believe the Turnpike and Parkway gas stations would always have to have a full serve option.
Okay. Just one more note about 2015, which again was, my understanding, the last big attempt to kind of include self-serve in New Jersey, which didn't pan out. It had gained bipartisan sponsorship in the state Senate, died almost immediately when then-Senate President Steve Sweeney said, you know, he would not post the bill. Sweeney, of course, was infamously, you know, ousted in the last election by Republican newcomer Edward Durr. So legislatively, for this go-round, Matt, has a huge roadblock been removed for proponents of self-serve at the pumps?
Well, yeah, Sweeney was, that is one roadblock I should have mentioned. But, you know, he was reflecting, I think, popular opinion. So the popular opinion, as far as I can tell, has not really changed significantly. We don't know where the new Senate president, Nick Scutari, is on this issue. And actually, since, you know, Sweeney said that, we also have a new assembly speaker. I'm not sure we know where he is on this issue, and he doesn't tend to take strong stances until closer to when he has to decide the issue. The governor has kind of expressed some openness to it, but I don't know if that will last after, you know, after he sees a little more polling and sees that New Jerseyans really do seem to cherish not being able to pump their own gas.
So let's get a little history, a little more history. When was New Jersey's ban on self-serve first implemented? And why? It's been over 70 years.
The law's from 1949. This was at a time when self-serve was, I think it was probably a little more involved to pump your gas. I believe there was a station, I don't know if it was New Jersey or somewhere else, and they came up with this, you know, save a couple cents, serve yourself innovation. But people saw it as a big fire hazard. There were various reasons. I think there might have even been women's safety mentioned as one of those reasons way back then. But of course, 1949 is a very different era. We have very different safety equipment than we did then. And most states went ahead and adopted self-serve. I think, you know, growing up, I couldn't even find a full-service gas station if I tried, at least by the time I was driving in the 1990s. So lots changed since then. Clearly, it's not a huge safety problem anymore, because I haven't seen anything that shows New Jersey gas stations are so much safer than gas stations everywhere else.
We've got a tweet from Ian who says, this issue will be moot in a few years when most cars will be charged, not filled up. Hadn't thought about that, Matt.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I think we're going to need to see a much, much better electric car infrastructure. Yeah. Before that can happen, because I could tell you that I would drive an electric car if I could, but I just have no practical way to do it. I park on the street in an urban area. There aren't chargers on every corner. I have nowhere to charge my car.
Good point. Okay, so this new legislation, back to self-serve, this new legislation has been introduced to the Assembly. Any hearings scheduled?
Not yet. I'm sure if there are, you'll hear about it immediately.
Any rumblings?
The New Jersey media will take any opportunity to write about this issue, myself included. It's both fun to write about, and it always draws readers. So you can bet even the tiniest movement on this will be covered by every news outlet in the state.
And one more question. Is there any companion legislation being crafted for consideration in the state Senate?
I believe... You know, I'm trying to think. I don't know if there is. I believe there will be if there isn't already. There's enough support for that. There's a state senator who was formerly an assemblyman. I think he led the effort in 2015. He's now a state senator, so I can't imagine he won't join this effort, named Declan O'Scanlan. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay. Matt Friedman, thanks for the update.
All right. Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Matt Friedman is a reporter for Politico New Jersey, and he writes New Jersey's playbook, The Daily Briefing. Up next on the Regional Roundup, we talk about the debate between keeping a daylight saving time and standard time in place or ditching one. Stay tuned. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and this is the Regional Roundup. After many years of wrangling with a seemingly endless debate over the value of changing the clocks twice a year, of switching between daylight saving time and standard time, has the country finally had enough? According to polls and the U.S. Senate, the answer is apparently yes. Last week, the Senate unanimously passed the Sunshine Protection Act, which would essentially keep us on daylight saving time all year round. The House has yet to answer with its version of the legislation, and as there are some big issues at stake, it could take a while. We'd like to know what you think. Stay with one choice, daylight saving or standard time all year round, or continue moving the clocks forward and then back in the spring and fall. The number to call is 888-477-9499. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Anthony Wood is here with us once again. He is a journalist for the Philadelphia Inquirer who writes about the atmosphere and other stories. Hi, Tony. Welcome back.
Morning, Mary. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. The Senate chose year-round daylight saving time as opposed to standard time, which is interesting, Tony, because the country tried this back in the early 70s, and it did not work out well, to say the least. Tell us about that.
It started at the end of 1973, actually. And it was probably the worst time of the year to do it. And January and February, it gets dark. The sun comes up around 7:30 around here at that time of year, and that's kind of late.
Yeah.
And kids were riding buses in the dark. There were a lot of dispute as to whether there were more accidents, but the fact is the educators were very concerned about kids boarding buses in the dark, and understandably, and it was also pretty darn cold. And if you have teenagers in the house, you know what it's like getting them out of bed in the morning.
Sure.
This was going to be a two-year experiment, and Congress gave up, and they rescinded it in 10 months. And by October, we were back on standard time.
So here we go again, I guess. Let's talk about the Senate legislation, version 2022. If it were to receive final approval, Tony, when would year-round daylight saving time go into effect?
Well, first of all, it was a bit of a misleading story out there that it passed unanimously. It did pass unanimously, but it was basically a procedural vote. It was proposed on the Senate floor, and nobody opposed it. So since no one actually raised a voice to oppose it, technically it was passed unanimously. And a lot of senators were really surprised about this. The deed was done, so it's now in the House. And I have a feeling that it's going to be months before we hear from this again, because the issues are very, very complex. Yeah. It's very divisive, and there's money at stake.
Yeah. Well, so we're essentially, Tony, then many senators unaware of the vote that was being taken.
That's correct. Yes, a lot of them were. they were very, very surprised at this, and so it wasn't as though this was a groundswell of support for this idea. It is. Among constituencies, think about it. It is so divisive. The public opinion polls have this pretty much divided down the middle between year-round daylight saving and year-round standard time. And if you're on the west end of the time zone, this is going to seem like a terrible idea. Like, for example, Marquette, Michigan, is in our time zone. They're in Eastern time zone. If we have year-round daylight saving time the first week in January, their sunrise will be 9:34 p.m.
Oh, my goodness. Wait, you mean a.m.?
Not a.m.
Sunrise, yeah.
Yeah.
But well, still, 9:35 a.m.? Wow.
But also, on the other side of that, in at the summer solstice, their sunset would be 9:47 p.m. Okay, and that's late. And the sleep people think that's a terrible idea, because they think that it's a cue to just stay up even later. And we already are a nation that is pretty sleep deprived.
So in short, sleep experts believe we need to get less light at night so our bodies can better transition to sleep, and more in the morning to help us wake up. Is that right?
Well, Mary, I've read a lot of studies, and that is about the most succinct version of that I've heard yet. So,
okay.
Yes.
Well, listen, Tony, we're getting calls and comments in on this pretty quickly here. I'm going to read a few of them. Comment from Julia. She says, permanent standard time all the time. It's the position of the National Sleep Foundation. There are higher numbers of accidents and health issues. Daylight saving time is bad for younger people. Then we have a comment from Lucia, who says, I hope they pass permanent daylight saving. I like the extra hour of daylight. I just don't get the point of changing clocks twice a year. And then back to Michael, who says, because of our circadian rhythms, scientifically, we should be on standard time permanently. This is just kind of, just a sense of the pulse of the nation here. People are pretty well divided on this.
Yeah, that's pretty much... That's it in a nutshell. One thing that I found over the years writing about weather and climate is that studies have shown almost everything. I bet you there's a study out there that says people who read studies will probably live in a permanent state of confusion. But intuitively, it seems to me that the sleep expert argument is the strongest one. Yeah. And one thing that's really galling about the situation we have now is we're only on standard time 4 months a year.
Now, why is that? Why has it shrunk in the past few decades? Because it used to be half and half, right?
It used to be half and half. And the idea of course, the whole idea behind daylight saving time is it allegedly saves energy. Now, there's conflicting data on that, and it doesn't appear to be a substantial saving. At one time, it made a lot of sense because you saved on electricity, you didn't use as many lights. But of course, these days, everybody has air conditioning pretty much.
Sure.
And you're going to be running at full power longer. And there's a lot of lobbying going on to shrink the period of standard time. And you think about it, there are a lot of interests who really want longer daylight, like the restaurant industry. It's very big for outdoor dining.
Yeah, you were speaking about the economics of it. And as a matter of fact, despite concerns about daylight saving time, a number of state legislatures have passed year-round daylight saving time laws, including Delaware's state legislature. So it really seems as if, as far as politicians are concerned, there might be a leaning toward daylight saving time because of the economics. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. And also it is. And I want to go back and I should have done this before, but I'd really like to know when all these year-round daylight saving time bills were passed, what time of year. Mm-hmm. 18 states that have these bills, of course, they're useless without a federal law because the law of the land is we switch the clocks. But I suspect that a lot of these bills must have been passed in springtime. I don't think anybody would pass this bill in December.
Yeah, especially, and on a serious note, if you do have teens who are waiting for the bus and et cetera, and it's pitch black outside, that's one of the major concerns, with daylight saving time year round. Okay, we have a comment from Dottie who asks, why don't they just move it a half hour and be done with it? Then both sides win. What do you think of that?
I think we're confused enough. I try to, as a journalist, we try to transcend our biases, and I have to tell you that I've never been a huge fan of getting up. A doctor asked me years ago whether I had trouble waking up, and I said, "Yeah, but only since birth." And when we move the clocks up, I still feel it from last week. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, yeah. It took me a full week, I think, to feel normal. Yeah,
and sometimes.
We're not the only ones.
And in fact, this whole social, you've heard of social jet lag. It's a phenomenon that a German chronobiologist has developed that says that one of the problems we have is that we absolutely disrupt our body rhythms during the week for work, and then we catch up on the weekends. And he contends that's unhealthy because it leads to all sorts of other problems. And, the argument people throw back at him says, wait a minute, if I take a flight somewhere, am I not doing the same thing? And his point is, well, no, because when you take a flight somewhere, you go on vacation, your body will adjust to the light cycle. When you just bump the clocks up an hour, suddenly you don't have that adjustment period.
Got it. Because you're inside.
Precisely.
Okay. We've got a comment from Tommy who says, I can't get excited about it either way. So it sounds as if Tommy is okay with springing ahead and falling back. So Tony, you write about a particular question regarding the switchover. When the clocks spring ahead every year, what happens to that 2 a.m. hour on the particular Sunday in which daylight saving time goes into effect? Does it just disappear or does it reappear in the fall?
Well, no, it's gone forever. Now, if this bill passes, the hour we lost last weekend is never coming back. And, it's kind of an existential concept. You get to 1:59:59, and it's never 2 a.m. It's suddenly 3 a.m. So at 1:45 on the day you turn the clocks up, it's actually 2:45. And years ago when I was... I remember the old TI-61212 number, the time number.
Okay.
Okay. It was always interesting to call at the time the clocks changed to see how they were going to handle it. And at 2 a.m. on daylight saving time, it was actually 1 a.m. And it's 3 a.m. on the standard time, it was 1. And then daylight saving time, it was 3. And, you're not getting it back if this becomes law.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's almost an argument trying to figure out where those hours have gone, either in the spring or the fall, for just keeping it, you know, one way or the other all year round, isn't it? A little less confusing that way.
and that seems to be the consensus, actually. Most people say we should stop messing with the clocks. I mean, my own modest proposal is if we're really going to keep doing this, I'd be against continuing to rob our weekends. And I would say do this during the work week, during work time, and let everybody go home an hour early.
So let's get into standard time. Again, a little bit more. What are the pros and cons of keeping standard time all year round? We lose that extra hour of daylight at the end of the day. But tell us a little bit more about what experts are saying.
The fundamental point is that you'd have more light in the morning. So you would get up and you would see light. And anyone who's involved in light therapy will tell you that that is far superior to waking up in the dark. And as a person, I can tell you it's way superior to waking up in the dark. Yeah. And you also will not be suddenly disrupting your rhythms during the year. You know, you will just, it's standard time, and that's all you have to worry about.
Go with the flow. Well, that kind of, you know, it almost plays into this comment from Suzanne, who sent an email. She says, I was one of those kids waiting for a bus in the dark in 1973-74. I used to watch the sun come up during my second or third hour-long class every morning, which is a little, it just feels a little disorienting. So we're not switching hours, and kids would have a little more light in the morning, not only to wake up, but, you know, to travel, you know, to school, you know, in, I guess. So, okay, well.
The key there is, you know, it's all about sleep. I mean, I personally would say there's no medicine on earth that even comes close to rivaling a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And anything that disrupts your sleep is going to be potentially destructive.
I think many of us would agree with you on that. Email from Matt says, seems like the easiest answer for schools and others is to simply change their schedule as makes sense for them. So we've had this debate, too, you know, when we've talked about teens and whether the bell is ringing too early for young people, especially those in high school. And you know, schools in general have a hard time moving that hour back anyway, Tony, you know, or moving the start time back because you've got sporting events and all that gets pushed back and some kids have jobs and et cetera. But that might be an answer, I guess, worthy of more consideration if we do go to daylight saving time year round.
Well, I've always thought that, I had teenagers in the house, and I always thought that it was cruel and unusual to make them get up so early. And they felt the same way, pretty much.
Yeah, and for the parents trying to get them up.
Yeah, it's brutal. You're wearing your clothes and everything else. But it's really destructive for kids. I mean, it for teenagers, it's no wonder so many of them fall asleep in class.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's now up to the House of Representatives, to make its move. And it doesn't seem as if that's going to happen anytime in the near future. Representative Frank Pallone, who's a Democrat from New Jersey and who chairs the House Energy and Commerce Committee, said last week, it's time we stop changing our clocks. But then he said this weekend, you know, it could be weeks or even months before House Democratic leaders put a vote up on any bill, you know, post a vote on any bill regarding the clock changes. Are you surprised to this?
They're dealing with their constituencies, you know, like Brendan Boyle, the Philadelphia congressman, is for year-round daylight saving time. But his wife is a school teacher who gets up at 5 a.m. She's pretty much opposed to it, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that is pretty much a microcosm of what's going on all over the country.
Agreed. So a bit of history, Tony. How and when did the practice of changing the clocks twice a year come about?
Well, some people attribute it to Franklin, which is a myth. Franklin wrote a satirical essay making some fun of the French. And whimsically proposed moving the clocks up 2 hours during the summer. It first came seriously under discussion in England, and it was finally adopted by the Germans in 1916 as a World War I energy conservation measure. We tried it in 1918, and unfortunately, the first day of daylight saving time, 1918, was Easter Sunday, and there was a tremendous blowback from clergy people.
I can imagine.
And it was such a mess that finally Congress said, let's stop this, and we'll leave it up to local option. And then 1966, we passed the Uniform Time Act. So everybody has been on this. Everybody now has been on the clock change regimen. And what's the only thing that's changed really is we've gone from 6 months to 4 months.
Got it. We have a question from Jill Tony, who says, does this happen in every country? I don't know if daylight saving is an international practice.
It is an international practice. I don't know if it happens in every country, but Russian, for example, has 11 different time zones. And interestingly, the Ukraine will move clocks back and forth, but they move their clocks back on March 27th. The Russian time zones do it the same weekend that we do. But I don't know if it's every country in the world that does this. But, you know, you think about it, the entire world is divided into time zones. Whether all countries recognize the Universal Convention on Time Zone, I'm really not sure.
But we're going to leave the conversation on this note, Tony. We've got a message from Tim who says, I don't know why people make such a big fuss about the time changes. I kind of like it. And Tony, it seems as if Tim is going to enjoy biannual clock changes, as we all will for the foreseeable future here.
Well, as long as I get my sleep, I don't care.
So. Anthony Wood, thank you so much. Great to have you with us, as always.
Well, thank you so much. Take care.
Tony Wood is atmosphere reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Up next on the Regional Roundup, our interview with Fresh Prince of Bel Air star Jabari Banks. You're listening to the Regional Roundup on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. The new show Bel Air is the story of the Fresh Prince with a much grittier vibe.
Do you know why I'm here from Philly?
Scrapping the bull court. Got nasty.
Who threw that? Was it you?
Now some bad man from Philly. He wanted to deal with you.
Boy, I moved mountains to get you here. So here's the story. Came to Bel Air for a better education. Simple. Be patient. Give this a real chance.
As Bel Air wraps up its first season, we'll spend the rest of today's show in conversation with Jabari Banks, whose character on the show was first immortalized by Will Smith on The Fresh Prince of Bel Air back in 1990. So, going in, the bar was high, but Banks is fully successful in a role reimagined and dramatically different from the 90s rendering. As you've likely heard, Bel Air is a somber interpretation of the first show's more lighthearted narration. Here, the character of Will is a young and impetuous West Philly high school basketball star who suddenly finds himself in jail after a stomach-churning run-in with a local gang member. A 9mm handgun is discovered in Will's backpack by police, and his mother, fearful for Will's life, is able to extract her son from his jail cell and ship him off to Bel Air after his uncle Phil, a rising political star in L.A., calls in a favor. This version of the story offers a heavy dash of modern-day realism and a lot of dramatic tension. Jabari Banks graduated from the University of the Arts in Philadelphia in 2020, and he joins us now to tell us about his experience playing the character of Will Smith on Bel Air. Hello, Jabari. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. We're really happy to have you here with us today. So the actor Will Smith embodied the character of Will in the 90s, and of course, it was a role that launched Smith into the stratosphere. How did you approach making this version of the character your own?
I knew I couldn't play Will the way Will Smith played Will. So I had to bring Jabari to the character and you know, bring my experiences and bring my upbringing and bring my instincts into the character and, you know, approach the role with truth and, you know, leaning into the situation that's going on in the 16-year-old young man's life. And so that's definitely how I approached the role. No preconceived notions of who this kid was, but actually living through his shoes day to day. And so I'm glad that, you know, I got to discover some truth in the situation rather than, you know, doing an impression of Will Smith.
Yeah, I've read that as a kid you loved watching the original show. So it wasn't hard to get the actor Will Smith out of your head as you were forming the new character.
Yeah, there's definitely moments where I was like, hey, how would Will do this? But you know what I mean? I definitely had to lean away from those moments. And, you know, there's definitely moments of levity within the show that we see hints of the old Will, you know, shine through. But, you know, with the subject matter that we're touching in this series, there wasn't too much room for that.
Yeah. Well, other characters have been reimagined as well. The role of Carlton, in particular, in the 90s version, Cousin Carlton was rich and conservative and funny and maybe a bit of a whiner. But Bel Air's Carlton, as portrayed by, is it Ali Sholatan, Jabari?
Yeah, Ali Sholatan.
So this Carlton snorts what he claims is Xanax with disturbing regularity and is a combative young man at odds with Will from the get-go and also perhaps combative with himself. How do you see the relationship between these two characters? And what is your relationship with Sholatan off screen?
Yeah, I feel like my relationship with Ali off screen has bled onto the screen in the most beautiful way possible, in the way that every artist could hope to do so. You know, we definitely had to establish that relationship outside of work that was, you know, comfortable in order for us to dive deep into who these characters were and how they combat and how they learn to coexist in the same environment through the characters of Will and Carlton. And so that we definitely see, you know, these two characters dealing with mental health and dealing with being a fish out of water and, you know, themes that are recognizable to so many people. And that's going to resonate with so many people, not only in the Black community, but in the world in general. And I feel like as the Black community, you know, we don't talk about, you know, mental health enough. And so the fact that we get to touch that on, you know, this series, it means a lot to not only me, but to Ali and to everyone who has been a part of this process and who has been through struggles, you know, that these kids are going through. And so in order to you know, to approach that work and approach that subject matter with truth and with, you know, and to be healthy in those situations, we needed to cultivate a relationship outside of the work that we were comfortable with being vulnerable with each other.
Speaking of challenging issues, in the first episode, Will comes upon Carlton in the school locker room with a bunch of fellow lacrosse players who are white. They're all rapping loudly to a song which drops the N-word a lot. And Will and Carlton get into it about who should have the right to say that word. Jabari, yeah. The writing here is really sharp, and each character brings up some important points. What did you think of this scene and how the conversation was handled?
I knew immediately when I read that scene that this show had something to say. And for me, it's all about conversation and having that conversation, whether this side is right or this side is wrong. It's all about perspective. And the fact that we get to open up that conversation for, you know, the community and for the world, that's just another piece in changing the world. You know, I feel like everything that we're doing in this show, you know, is necessary in order to see real change in our everyday life. And the fact that, you know, we get to have the opportunity to spark minds and to start conversations, that's what it's all about for me.
And at the same time, earlier you mentioned that there are some lighter moments in the show. So tell us a little bit more about those, and are they few and far between?
You know, honestly, I feel like the perception of the show is that, like, it's very dark and gritty and dramatic. And that's, like, true, because we're, like, we're leaning into the reality. It's a reflection of who we are. But there definitely are a lot of moments, in my opinion, of levity, you know, and moments that we get to laugh and see this family enjoy themselves and enjoy, you know, their community and love on each other. And so, you know, I definitely feel like those moments are definitely sprinkled in throughout each episode.
Let's talk about acting method. There's a compelling scene in the first show in which the character of Uncle Phil, played by Adrian Holmes, is giving young Will a dressing down. He's not happy with Will's attitude. And this 16-year-old is stoic, as you might expect at that age, can't look his uncle in the eye. But there are tears rolling down Will's cheeks. This scene seemed very real. Are you one of those people who, I mean, how did that work? Can you cry in command? I mean, did you really have to kind of go to a different place to make this happen?
In the pilot episode, that was definitely one of the first moments where I actually felt vulnerable in a long time in front of, you know, a lot of people. Working with great collaborators like Morgan Cooper and Adrian Holmes definitely gave me the space and the time to go to that place, to get to that place where I felt vulnerable. And I'm glad that, you know, that we get to see that on screen. And I know I've grown so much since then. And so I know, you know, since then I've been able to tap into a place where I can go to that place, you know, easily. But I definitely had to take my time with that scene.
Yeah. Well, again, the original Fresh Prince was a springboard for the actor Will Smith, who went on to, of course, an amazing career. He's up for an Oscar, you know, for his role in King Richard, his most recent accolades. Where do you see your acting career going?
In a very similar direction, I would say, I'm focusing every day on, you know, becoming a better artist and becoming a better storyteller in general, whether that be with, you know, acting or music or with clothes, you know, or with, you know, animated series. You know, I focus every day on becoming a more truthful storyteller and telling the stories that I feel the world needs. And so I definitely see my career going in that direction and you know, even beyond.
Mm. So tell us about your music.
Yeah. So I have music coming out this year, and I'm excited for it, and I'm excited for everyone here.
What sorts of music? What do you like?
My music is a new marrying of R&B and hip hop in a way that we haven't seen it married before.
I hear you're also into fashion, Jabari. Why? What do you like? And who do you like as designers?
Oh, I'm really into Pierre Moss right now. Yeah, they're very captivating, and I love what they've cultivated over there. And you know, I'm a really big, avid Virgil Abloh fan, and you know, RIP to him, rest in power and in peace. And you know, I really appreciate what he did for the street fashion community and the streetwear community. And you know, what he's done with Louis Vuitton, I really admire, you know, his steps and what his, you know, collaboration with Jordan's and what he's done for the community is so huge. And so I definitely want to follow in those footsteps.
So of the three, Jabari, fashion, music, acting, which is nearest to your heart?
You can't do that. No, I can't choose. It's like choosing your favorite kid. I choose all three. No, I would say that music was my first child. You know, it's the oldest child, and I love them, and it's taught me so much about myself and how to be a parent. And the middle child was, I would say, fashion, because I felt like that's where I learned, you know, who I was and how to express myself through the clothes that I wear. And I feel like, you know, my youngest is acting, and I love them, and you know, they get the most attention right now.
So speaking of your baby, did Will Smith offer you any advice about tackling this role?
Yeah, he did. You know, a lot of advice throughout this past 6 months. And, you know, more about life in general and how that reflects art. And, you know, because life reflects art and art reflects life. And, you know, a lot of life lessons. And I'm so grateful for that. But I would say, you know, the biggest one that he's told me is to just be myself, you know, just be myself and bring myself to the character and learn myself through the character. And that is a huge stepping stone for my career and stepping stone for me as a human, learning how to be vulnerable and learning how to, you know, tell the truth in a situation, not only on screen, but, you know, in life, you know, because, you know, that's definitely something that a lot of us struggle with. You know,
have you heard from fans of the original show about Bel-Air?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what are they telling you?
They're loving it. They're loving it. And that's what's so special about Bel-Air. It's like we're reaching a new audience, but, you know, old fans can appreciate it as well. And, you know, they see all of the nuanced, you know, Easter eggs that we've thrown in there and little tidbits from the original that we've thrown in there. So that's super exciting for them to see, you know.
So Peacock has greenlit 2 seasons of Bel-Air. And as you told me earlier, you know, off mic, the production of season 2 hasn't quite yet got underway. Any hints of what is ahead for this series, Jabari, without, you know, giving us any real spoilers?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't give you any real spoilers. I still don't know. But, you know, I feel like we're going to go a lot deeper into who these characters are. I think we know, you know, surface level sort of, okay, this is what they're dealing with in their day to day. But, you know, I feel like we're going to get to see a lot of backstory into who these characters are. And so I'm excited to do that.
Hmm. So are there any actors whom you really want to work with in the future and why?
Definitely Will Smith.
How do you see yourself working with Will Smith, and what sort of a format? What sort of a storyline?
Oh, yeah, I don't even know. There's too many stories to tell. There's so many stories to tell. There's so many ways that we could go about it. But I think learning from him just as a human and just to see his process as an actor would be very informative for me and very eye-opening. And so definitely him. Younger cat, Daniel Kaluuya. Love to work with him. He's an amazing actor, one of my favorites out right now. Lakeith Stanfield in the same boat as him. Michael B. Jordan, Denzel Washington, all of these, like, you know, amazing, like, black male actors. I definitely feel like I can, they're like big brother, you know, uncle, father figures to me. So yeah. I definitely want to tap into with them.
And we'll end on a lighter note. Have you debuted anything, you know, on Bel Air fashion wise that might become a trend or that you're hoping becomes a trend?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, I can't think of
it. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. Yeah, we're still working on it. We're going to elevate season two.
Yeah.
Elevate. That's what season two is about, elevating. It's a theme for season two.
Well, it sounds like it's something for the fans to look forward to, by all means. Also, too, there was one great story that I neglected to bring up here in our conversation. You know, when you auditioned for this role, Jabari, you know, you were literally up against hundreds of actors. Did you think you had a shot?
I knew it was me. I knew it was me. I just had to prove it to them. You know, and what was great about auditioning over Zoom was, like, I didn't see no competition. You know, it was me versus me. And so I definitely knew that it was me. In the back of my mind, I was like, but they're going to go with a bigger name. You know, they're going to go with someone who's already done something. You know, I'm just so grateful that I'm in this position and they chose me, you know?
Yeah. Well, tell us about the conversation you had with Will Smith in a closet, I hear. Via Zoom.
Yeah. Not in the closet, right? You know, I was in a closet. That was in my friend's closet. But, yeah, you know, Will surprised me and told me I got the part. And I went into that Zoom call thinking that was an audition because Morgan Cooper's assistant, Bernardo, he calls me and he says, Morgan wants to do one more creative session with you. And before that, I had done my final producer session. So I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on? So, you know, I'm like, I don't know what they want to see, but I'm going to show them everything I got. So I had all my sides lined up. I had everything ready. And I got onto the call and there Will was. And it was such a special moment and I'll never forget it. You know, it's crazy. You know, Will's been my hero. And so the fact that I got to interact with him, not only in that way, but, you know, throughout these past 7 months in the ways that I have, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's so early. It's so early. It's so early. There's so much to do, so much to look forward to. I promise you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're really looking forward to see how your future in acting and theater and music unfolds. And Jabari Banks, it was really terrific to have you here with us today. Best of luck to you in all of that. And I hope we can chat again in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Jabari Banks plays the title role of Will Smith in the new series Bel Air, which streams on Peacock. Our engineer today is Diana Martinez, our producer, Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. As always, thanks for listening and be well.